My name is Lakshdatta, and this is Umid Factory, a podcast about hope, how to find it, create it, rebuild it in a post-pandemic India. In every episode of this show, I'll be talking to experts and leaders from diverse industries, people much smarter than me, as we explore answers to two key questions. Where do we go from here, and how do we find, create, rebuild hope within ourselves to get us there? In episode 4, my guest is truly one of the most inspiring and accomplished business leaders in our country today, the chairman and managing director of Nestle India, Mr. Suresh Narayanan. Not that I need to tell you how much of a big deal Nestle is in India, but just to give you some context, it's a multinational, multi-billion dollar company, and it has been a part of India for over a century. It is the name you see on some of the most popular consumer goods we have in India today, such as Maggi, Nescafe, Nesty, Cerelac, KitKat, and on and on. Mr. Narayanan has been with Nestle for over 20 years and took over as managing director and chairman about 5 years ago, right in the middle of the whole Maggi crisis. Since then, not only has the company grown multiple fold under his leadership, but it also managed to somehow increase its profits in the middle of the COVID pandemic this summer. So in this conversation, I asked Mr. Narayanan about how he managed to do all that, what his hopes are for the future, and how Nestle is keeping its employees, its suppliers, and consumers like you and me safe and happy. Here is that conversation. When all of this started happening in early March, even in February, when news started coming in that it's entered India, the COVID pandemic was about to become a major issue. When that initial lockdown started being announced in March, what was your personal initial reaction to hearing about it? And after that initial reaction, what were some of the decisions that you had to make as a leader of Nestle to ensure the safety of your employees and then also the consumers?
Sure. Thank you, Lakshya. Thank you for having me on your show. I think, I'm not new to difficult or crisis-like situations. I have faced some of them in my life, and I think I have learned over a period of time to have one singular capability, and that is to quickly read a situation and to accept that there is a problem. I think one of the biggest tasks that a leader is vested with during a crisis is the fact that you have to accept that there is a crisis and that there is something that is well beyond the ken of your own capabilities, your own entire comprehension, or in fact under your own control. So I think it's important to internalize that, and because there was a lot of poo-pooing initially, saying that look, this is not such a big thing, and it will come and go, and we have had SARS, and we have had MERS, and we have had various other kind of viral attacks in the past. But this was I think special, and this was as virulent as it gets. So I think acceptance. So therefore, if I were to say the biggest leadership challenge in a crisis is to manage yourself more than managing your people. The capacity should be to manage yourself, which means to sense of acceptance. Secondly, to have a sense of positive perspective, the fact that that you can come out of it, you can find ways of coping with it. It is, a hopeless leader is, I believe, a hopeless leader. So it's very difficult to lead an organization if you yourself are completely hopeless about what the consequences are going to be. And I think the third thing is, in a pandemic of this nature, this is not a normal crisis situation. This is not a situation where an individual occurrence has impacted a company or a group of people. Mm-hmm. Or indeed, it is something that is in the nature of, let's say, a flood or an accident or something of that kind. All of these are tractable. There is a finite timeline, and you know that you will get into some trouble, but you will get out of it with some actions. But this is a pandemic of enormous proportions, which has completely kind of impacted the lives of so many people. You know, it's unhinged people's sedate view of lives. People are going about their tasks, and suddenly they are being stopped in the track and put into a path of darkness that they don't know what it leads to. So I think at this time, I've said this before, but I strongly believe that in a crisis of this kind, you don't run a company, but you serve a family. And I think if you take that as a spirit of leadership, then a lot of immediate priorities fall in place. So for me, my first and only priority as I started the crisis was to protect my people. And I think that was the most important factor in my mind. Yes, there was the fact about continuity of business, and there was a fact about reaching out to others. But the first instinct is to protect your own family. Mm-hmm. And I think as a company, we took decisions quite early. In fact, even in as early as February, mm-hmm. the Nestle Group worldwide had taken a decision to ban all international travel. Mm-hmm. So sometime around the beginning of February itself, we had taken the call saying that there will be no international travel. And this was well before any country had put out travel bans, including our own country had put out travel bans. Mm-hmm. And then I think we started work from home on the 17th of March, after taking a decision on the 16th of March that we felt that it was not safe for employees to come to the office because of travel and because of the various interfaces that they had to have in the journey. And we took the decision to work from home. And I think that was seamlessly implemented by the IT and the administration team. The head office in Gurgaon has almost 700 people. Mm-hmm. So 700 people to work in the office and work from home in 24 hours time, takes a huge effort. Similarly, in all our other offices, we did the same principle. People are asked to work from home. Our field force was withdrawn from the front line because we believe that it was not safe for them to work. We have a nutrition team. They were also taken off and put to work from home. So I think we took all the steps to see that our people are number one protected.
Mm-hmm. So Nestle, I mean, over 100 years in India, I believe 108 or 9 by now, it has a huge history of being a part of our community. And in fact, I thought I'd share this with you because I have the opportunity to talk to you. When I went to college in California when I was 17, and one of the things that happens when you move to another country is you start becoming nostalgic for your home. You become homesick a little. So one of the first things me and my friends did, who had also come from India, was that we went to the Indian store in San Diego where I lived, and we looked for Maggi, because Maggi is synonymous with home for us at that point. And I honestly did not know when that happened that Maggi was not started in India. I thought Maggi was India, So I had this relationship, and one of the first things I remember my parents and I decided to do when the lockdown started was go on Milk Basket and order Maggi and Nescafe. That was one of the first things we did. So
yeah,
the products that Nestle makes, they touch almost every Indian's lives. What role do you think Nestle as a company plays as a part of the Indian community, and what do you hope for it to play as we delve deeper and deeper into the pandemic?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question, Lakshya. Firstly, I think what you're sharing, memories of these brands are a very important memories of of every Indian youth who travels overseas. And I've heard similar stories from other young Indians as well when they travel to the US or the UK or wherever. They look for home, and for home, the signature of home is a brand like Maggi. So I think it is a very Indian brand, even though it's a global brand. It's very Indian in its outlook, very Indian in its approach, and at its heart, it's very much an Indian feeling that it gives. But just in as much as you have the brand experience, I think what's important to understand is that a company like Nestle impacts not just lives of consumers, but there is a whole ecosystem behind this that the company is involved with. I mean, if you take, for example, any of our milk products that you might consume, whether it's our UHT milk or A Plus, or whether it is Everyday, or whether it is some of our nutrition brands, there are almost 100,000 dairy farmers who have been giving us milk since 1961, wow, when we started our factory in Moga. And they've been giving us milk every single day since then. So one of the tasks that we had to protect when the pandemic started was to ensure that the milk that they gave us, we collected it without fail and processed it without fail and paid them without fail, so that there is no disruption in their economy. Mm-hmm. Because remember that this is not a transactional relationship. At one level, you can say that, look, they're giving you milk, you're paying for them, so what is the big deal? But there is a big deal, because it's a relationship of trust. We give them advice on what kind of milch cattle to have, what kind of feed, what kind of veterinary medicines, what kind of quality control, what kind of farm management do they need to do. So there is a deep involvement, to the extent that some farmers even call their homes as Nestle House, that the relationship has been so close. And their kids, God bless them, today are in places like Canada and UK and all that, after having got a good education. So the fact is that there is an immense trust and gratitude towards the company. And I think it is the responsibility of corporates to also keep that trust. It is not to exploit at that point in time, saying, look, I have nothing to offer. You have everything to offer to support them. So we supported these farmers, and not for a single day did the milk supply from them stop. In fact, they gave us more milk than we could even, that we were even handling on a single day. Mm-hmm. But we took it all, and we ensured that their economy remained and their families remained intact. And it's interesting that almost 70,000 out of these 100,000 farmers that we deal with, dairy farmers in Punjab, they are women farmers. So therefore, there is a predominance of women farmers in this.
Right.
Because long before diversity became a topic in boardrooms, women in Punjab had started participating in supporting the livelihoods of the family. Mm-hmm. And dairy farming was the way in which they did it. So therefore, we are very proud of, in a sense, leading this revolution in Punjab, at least, and continuing it till today. Mm-hmm. Similarly, we have got more than a couple of thousand suppliers. There are wheat farmers. There are almost 300,000 to 400,000 wheat farmers who grow the wheat to convert into the atta that goes into making of Maggi and some mm-hmm. of our other wheat-based products. Again, it is a relationship of trust. Right. We have been with them for decades, for years. The flour millers have been with us since Maggi started in 1983. Similarly, we have spice farmers, in places like Andhra and in Gujarat and in Maharashtra and other places. These and other suppliers have been with us. We work a lot with MSMEs. Mm-hmm. The really micro and small and medium enterprises. And our first task in this pandemic was to ensure that all of these people are protected. And I right. think that was the most important task that we took on. And that is the impact of the company. The impact mm-hmm. of the company is not just on the millions of consumers. So in as much as Lakshya, we were trying to double up and to really work extremely hard to meet your requirements, because like you, many consumers started to suddenly stock up. You know, it's a very disruptive situation where millions of consumers want to do panic buying, and you know, the company doesn't cater to floods of 15, 20, 25% upticking of demand. So on the one hand, we were struggling with that in all this pandemic, but on the other hand, we were also trying to support every single unit that was depending on Nestle for its livelihood, because we have depended on it. Remember that all these guys are the ones that have made Nestle. So in a distress, it is the task of the company. Therefore, I say that, look, it has, you know, crisis like this is not about hard management techniques. It is about soft compassion. And I think it is that soft compassion that builds for the tangibility of relationships in good times and in bad times.
Right, right. So as you mentioned, you know, you're not new to crises like this. And I mean, we know that when you began your tenure as chairman and MD, the whole Maggie fiasco had just taken place. So obviously, you know, there's no, like, even for people who go to business school, there's no pandemic class, like how to deal with pandemics. So what do you think during these 6 months, five, 6 months that have happened, that you have learned as a leader? And conversely, what are some of the things that you thought you were sure about, but you had to unlearn as a leader to lead your team?
Look, I think it's a very good question. Firstly, you know, while I accepted the pandemic and realized that I was on to something that was really big because it was of global scale, at the same time, I think I never imagined the kind of devastation that this would cause. I mean, the kind of job losses, the kind of economic destruction, the cutback of wages, the shutdown of businesses, the shattering of dreams and lives. I think this is something that I honestly did not imagine. I mean, I knew it will be destructive. But I honestly thought that this is something that maybe we'll be going through a couple of months, and then we will gradually start coming out of it. And maybe in a couple of quarters, we'll start building back both the economy and lives of people. But now it looks like it will be a long, long time. It's not going to be a quick fix, because the devastation and the kind of cracks that have developed in society, in the environment, in the economy, in business, is so deep, and the wounds and gashes are so deep that it will take time. Firstly, we have to even comprehend how much we have lost. And after you comprehend how much you've lost is when you start building back. So I think this is something that that honestly defied my comprehension. But what I've seen on the other hand is that, yes, indeed, you know, crisis never comes with a calling card. It always suddenly descends upon you, and you know, as Leo Tolstoy once said, he says, you know, happy families are alike, unhappy families are unhappy in their own way. So it's true about good times. You know, good times are alike; everybody has a good time, but bad times are unique, because each bad time is unique, is a unique bad time that you've got. But yet, in these very bad times, I've seen some of the best human behaviors. You know, the capability to shoulder responsibility, the capability to serve, the capability to rise above your own personal good and rush out to do good for others, the acts of individual and collective acts of heroism, the acts of sacrifice, the acts of empowerment, the acts of enablement. I mean, I have so many examples in my own company. You know, this my real touching example is of a husband in faraway Northeast who walked for meters each day for 3 days to get permission from the authorities to start the distribution of the company's products. You know, it is, and there are salespeople who have loaded in the boot of their car. They have taken stocks. And they have gone at midnight to chemists and pharmacies to give some of our products which are essentials so that the consumers can be served.
Right.
There is a particular case in Indore of a girl who was, she was a patient with a paralytic attack. And one of our products called Peptamen, it's an essential product that is given in post-operative care. They were, her parents were running out of this product. And in the next 2 days, they would not be able to give this child this product. It has to be given intravenously. And there was panic, and they approached one of our Nestle people. And this young man ensured that he spoke to the courier authorities, he spoke to the local authorities, and managed to somehow organize the stocks from Ahmedabad, come across to Indore. He personally collected it and gave it to that family so that the child could be saved. So I think there are numerous ways in which human beings reach beyond the clouds and beyond what you might think are the limits of their own endeavor. And do things. So I think in some sense, this has brought out in on one side the worst in men and women and also the best in men and women. And I think I choose to celebrate the best because this is unique. And this is something that if it happens in all times, it will be a complete a reset of human beings and the way in which we deal with each other.
As I mentioned, you know, you joined as you've been at Nestle for 20 years, but you took over as the leader of Nestle India about 5 years ago. And I read recently that you've also been extended for the next 5 years. So the company's been very successful for not just for the brands, but the consumers, but also shareholders. I wonder what you think, you know, having gone through 2020 so far, as a leader, where do you think, what are the things you think you want to create under your leadership at Nestle over the next 5 years, internally within the company and, of course, consumer facing? And what are the things you think you want to change about the brand that to adapt to you know, unknown, uncertain times?
Look, firstly, I think, you know, I think I want to dispel one belief that a lot of people have is that I am singularly responsible for a lot of the success of the company. I think it's not true. Nestle is a very strong company. It has got very, very committed, very, very dedicated people who have worked in this company for many years. It has a unique culture, which makes us successful. We are very much a family company. We believe a lot in values of respect and decency and ethics and honesty and transparency and trust in the way in which we deal with people and with our partners and stakeholders. So I think I've been privileged to lead this this organization. And I think the success is attributable entirely to my team. And yes, as a leader of the organization, there would be some of it which will stick on to me. I accept it with humility, but I think the larger credit must be and should be with my team. You know, every leader dreams of leaving an organization in better health than when they came onto the scene. I think I've already been blessed with that. The company is stronger because I came in at a time when it was vulnerable. But I'm grateful that the team rallied around me and accepted me as a leader and gave me the respect, gave me the leeway, gave me the trust to be able to do the things that we have done. I think it's a company whose time has come. You know, I believe that, you know, in every society, in every economy, as a consequence of demographic growth, income growth, aspirations, lifestyles, and changes, there is a sweet spot. There is a moment when the time for a company comes, when it is able to uniquely succeed because of the environment. Today's environment is of aware, educated consumers. Today's environment is about seeking nutrition, seeking quality, seeking safety, seeking trust. You know, in one of the things in the COVID environment is that consumers are seeking trust. You want to go back to the brands that you're familiar with. You don't want to try out you know, new kids on the block. You know, a Nestle, you know, Milkmaid for over 100 years, you know, Maggie for more than 30 years, you know, a Kit Kat, which is 70, 80 years old, a Nescafe, 80 years old. So these are all old, tried, trusted brands. You know what they stand for. You know what you can expect. So I think I look forward to transitioning the company into an even better performing company, into a even more robust, innovative culture as an organization. But at the same time, I think what I would like to leave the company with whenever I do leave is as a more caring company, mm-hmm. as a more compassionate company, as a more contributing company visibly to society, so that it becomes a virtuous circle in itself. The company, the brands, the partners, the business, the impact is all in the positive direction. And this becomes a virtuous circle where a company contributes to healthier societies, to healthier communities, to happier moments for consumers, because that's what we offer. And as a company, if you're able to do that on a sustainable basis, I think that would be, I'd be very happy with it, and would be very happy as a leader to have contributed in whatever way to this small revolution in the company.
For younger entrepreneurs and people looking to find opportunity and in an adversity during this time, what message of hope do you have for them for doing business in this new decade, which is unanticipated? So what would you like to share with them?
Look, I think, the young are always special for me. The young are always special because the young offers hope. The young offers aspiration, offers innovation, and offers the chance of a better society that maybe generations like mine have not achieved. You know, we have not achieved that. And I think it is a constant journey. What I would really urge the young is, number one, to be confident, to be confident of yourselves. Do not be diffident. Do not think anything is that intrinsically something is wrong with you. Each of us is born with strengths and weaknesses. Leverage your strengths and work on your weaknesses. Never try and be a perfect human being, because you will never be, and none of us, even if we profess it to be, that is true. So we are who we are, and therefore I think confidence is important. Number two is attitude is important. You will come through sunshine, you will also see storms, you will also see rain, but I think human beings are wired to be tenacious, are wired to be resilient, are wired to come out of difficult situations. That's why mankind has survived for so many years and so many millennia, despite all the difficulties. So I think attitude is important. Number three is, if you are passionate about the idea, you will succeed. You have mm-hmm. to have the passion to make that idea work. Ideas are not just born out of thin air. They come out of conviction and thought and competence. So if you think your ideas are good, go after it and don't allow yourself to fall by the wayside. Number four is, my suggestion to youngsters is to follow an ethical, trustworthy path. I know we all want to be billionaires. I think, you know, we all see stars when we see Bill Gates, mm-hmm. when we see Steve Jobs, when we see an Azim Premji or a Narayana Murthy or a Narana Nilakeni. You know, these are all stars and these are all people who have done exceptionally well. But you have never sat down to ask them what are the pains they went through in order to make that dream come true. You are looking at the end result of it and saying, what a great achievement. I want to be that in 10 years and 5 years. I think you have to allow yourself the time to set your business on a trustworthy, honest, and a sincere path of delighting consumers or customers, as the case may be. And last but not the least, before you choose your investors, choose your people well. You know, mm-hmm. one thing to get good investors to come into your business, but choose your people and set the culture. I think many young entrepreneurs fail not because their ideas are bad, not because their funding patterns, their Series A and B have been faulty, not that they have found lousy investors who are fly-by-night operators. But invariably, they themselves have failed to create an organization that inspires, that enables, and that empowers. You want to do everything yourself, and you believe that you are the center of that universe. Get that thought out of your head, because if you are able to create the right culture and the right mode of performing, you will create organizations that have longevity. A Nestle was started by an Henri Nestle, who was a serial entrepreneur who failed. But he had a good heart, and he started by saving a life of a child because he was a trained pharmacist. That product that he produced then still exists. It's called Cerelac. Mm-hmm. The culture that he set was a culture of trustworthiness, of quality and safety. 155 years later, we are still the world's biggest consumer goods company. We are still called Nestle, long after Henri Nestle has gone to his grave. What did Henri Nestle create? He created a company with a culture and a set of values, and everything else followed. So if you do this as entrepreneurs, I think you have a golden era and you have great opportunities.
Sir, thank you so much for your time and for sharing these amazing nuggets of wisdom with us. One of the ideas that I want when I started the show was to not just talk about hope, but to also help spread hope. So one thing I do is that the show encourages people to check out different charities. And our main charity that we support is the Salaam Balak Trust Delhi, which works with the street children. Is there any charity that you would also like to mention before we go that our listeners can check out, something that you particularly support?
There is one called the Genesis Foundation, which I would like to mention. It's a wonderful foundation that is working, the donors directly contribute to saving the life of a child who would be from an underprivileged family with a serious heart condition. So these are children with serious heart conditions who otherwise might die or might not live a productive life. And I think the Genesis Foundation is doing some truly outstanding work. I've had the privilege of also being a donor there. And I would mention that as something. Those who want to save the lives of children who are underprivileged, but with a serious heart condition, I think that's your opportunity. It's a very well-run foundation. It's run by professionals, and it is doing yeoman service. So I think that could be one that I would recommend.
Thank you for listening to this episode. While I still have your attention, I want to talk to you about this podcast's partner in hope, the Salaam Balak Trust, an organization in Delhi NCR that for the last 30 years has been working to improve the lives of street children. If you want to join the Umeed Factory community in creating hope, I urge you to check out the Salaam Balak Trust on their website, salaambalaktrust.com. For just 500 rupees, you can help provide sanitation kits to these children during this time. If you can give more, they have other options as well. You can pay for a child's meals, their education, their healthcare, or just a general donation to the organization to support their many programs. And if you can't afford to donate right now, that's completely okay. All I ask of you then is that you share this episode with someone you know and spread the word about the work that the Salaam Balak Trust is doing. That's it for this episode of Umeed Factory. Thank you for listening. Please follow or subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to this. You can also follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at Umeed Factory. And you can send me your stories of hope at umeedfactory@gmail.com. My name is Lakshdatta, and I wish you hope.